Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be a very interesting dialogue about the tragic death of 43-year-old Eric Garner. Mr. Garner was a 350-pound asthmatic husband and father of six who was killed a week ago yesterday on the streets of Staten Island, New York, while in police custody. An undercover officer used a banned chokehold that caused his death. An amateur video captured the entire incident on tape. It also showed EMT workers arriving and failing to administer CPR on what administer CPR or even give Mr. Garner oxygen. Most people who have viewed the tape are at a loss for why the encounter with the police had to turn deadly and ultimately cause his death. So tonight we're going to talk about what happened that particular day in Staten Island, New York, that caused police officers to use such poor judgment, first of all. In dealing with Mr. Garner, it doesn't seem at all that he was even hurt when he was saying to them, you know, every time I see you all, you're messing with me, I just want to be left alone. It didn't seem like they were actually explaining to Mr. Garner exactly why they were detaining him and exactly why he was being placed under arrest. It seems he had had a previous or prior police record of selling loose cigarettes and untaxed cigarettes, and I think even possession and sale of marijuana. And I think the other charge was some type of fight that he had, an altercation or something to that effect. And so we're wondering tonight, why did Mr. Garner's death have to turn, why did his incident with the police have to turn deadly? What happened that particular day when Mr. Garner encountered the police? Why wasn't from the beginning it was more civilized? Why was it escalated so quickly? And the entire thing was caught on tape by Mr. Orta, a friend of Eric Garner's. And so we're just wondering, knowing that police officers knew that someone was videotaping the entire incident, why is it that they continue, you know, to handle the situation as they did? Why did they use the chokehold knowing that the chokehold was banned? Why didn't anyone consider the size of Mr. Garner and the way that they handled him at the point when he says, I can't breathe several times? Why wasn't any of that taken into consideration? That's what we're going to talk about tonight. I see Mr. A.J. Houston is on the line already. Good evening, Mr. Houston. How are you doing? A.J. Houston?
I'm doing well, Carrie. How about yourself?
I'm good. You've probably seen the videotape like the rest of us. What are your thoughts on what happened that evening?
Well, I'm saying it's happening way too often these days that you have all these people. I think what happens is the police go in with an attitude from jump because it's a hostile situation. And for it to happen like that, because I think this is, say again?
Why was it a hostile situation, though?
No, I'm saying, the police go in thinking it's a hostile situation from the beginning. You know, they say, it's family quarrel or whatever they're going for. And they already go in, guns blazing, although the guns aren't out. They just, and I don't understand it. This is, the fourth time this year something has happened where it's an altercation with the police, and they were also attacking the people with the cameras like they didn't want to be recorded properly.
Exactly. A lot of people feel that we're currently living under a police state. And it almost feels that way sometimes because, if you're male or female, and you're afraid to encounter the police for fear that the situation will escalate and turn deadly, just like it happened for Mr. Garner, that's a sad situation because we understand, police are trained to protect and serve us. But lately it feels as though most people are distrustful of the police.
Yeah, because it's not just in the black community. It was always that way in the black community. If they actually showed up. Because a lot of times, you know, because I know I'm originally from Dallas, lived in Oak Cliff in South Dallas, and, you know, you call the police, and it would take them forever to get there, and everything would be dispersed by the time they get there. But when they got there, you could just fit the you could fit the description and just be walking by. So it's always been that way in our community. It's just now that it's bleeding over, and it's a shame that now it's in rural America and in suburbia and everywhere else that it's like they don't care anymore.
Wow. I see Mr. Ronald Hurd has joined the conversation. Good evening, Ronald. How you doing?
All good. Good evening, everybody. It's an honor to be here.
Good evening.
Good evening. You know, Ronald, what do you think happened that day? What do you think happened that caused things to turn deadly?
Well, you know, there's a saying that people have. It said, your words create worlds. Your words create worlds. And when Brother Gardner, I'm not saying that was justified, when he said that was the last time that was going to happen, it was the last time that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think body language says a lot, because I know I've been getting pulled over by the police since I was 11 years old. And I never did have a fear of the police. But also, I'm very tough. I know who I am. And I don't let certain people get into my psyche. Because a lot of times people do things. It's not what happens to you. It's how you respond to what happens to you. And black folks, we've been responding to white supremacy and racism for generations. And, you know, whatever you start to accept becomes the norm. And it was very unfortunate because the officer, really all the officer had to do was to write him a citation. And so Brother Goddard could have had his day in court. That's all you really had to do.
Well, has anybody determined as of yet if he even had any loose cigarettes on him? I think I heard him say in the videotape, I didn't even have a bag. I know at the time, you know, when they start checking his pockets, I didn't see them find a bag. So has any of the police reports or news articles even indicated that they found anything on him? I haven't heard it. Have y'all heard it?
No, I don't think they found anything substantial.
No, I haven't either. I don't think they did.
That's the scary part. I know that recently they dropped charges against him that went back to 2013, which, you know, said a lot. It's like, why all of a sudden now, just because he's dead, you know, is all of the charges now considered to be dropped? Why did the prosecutor's office all of a sudden decide that those charges were not legit? I don't know if I'm saying that they weren't legitimate. I just don't know that he explained why he dropped them. I just understand that the charges were dropped. And that doesn't make sense to me. If he had cases pending, you know, it looked like it would be in their best interest to at least let those charges stay on the books. Why would they drop them unless it indicates they had been harassing him and they didn't want that information to come forward?
I never think it was what you said.
Kind of answer your question. You know, when the police are seemingly at fault, they try and make everything as calm as they can, try and, you know, make the situation a little bit better than it is, and there's no way for them to do that. So dropping the charges might be one way of them attempting to do that.
It says the Staten Island District Attorney's Office Wednesday, that was the day of his funeral, dropped cases against Gardner from 2013 and earlier this year. Why would they just drop them?
Well, one of the things Mayor de Blasio, the current mayor of NYC, he ran on was to try to eliminate the stop and frisk policy of the NYPD. And Eric Gardner is probably a poster man. I wouldn't say boy, but a poster man for the stop and frisk policy going wrong. You look at New York City, I mean, they've been in the news for years how they treated men of color as it pertains to stop and frisk. So I think that Eric Gardner was a victim of that. And also I think Staten Island is interesting because there's where a lot of mafia people live. You know, mob bosses and whatnot live in Staten Island. That's where they do the mob wife stuff and all that other stuff. So, I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, My problem with the Eric Garner thing was the fact that how they covered the story from the get-go. It's like it was okay for them to kill him because he was a 400-pound asthmatic man. And they kept on saying it. It bothered me.
You know what? There were several police websites where they say police are allowed to go on and vent about certain situations. And we looked at one of them, and it was referring to exactly the same thing. They said that Eric Garner caused his own death because he was overweight. And the fact that he was resisting arrest. So, therefore, he's dead because of those two things. Nothing else. And I thought, how can that be? But anyway, looks like Gwen Samuels has joined the conversation. Good evening, Gwen. How you doing?
Good evening, Carrie, and everyone on the phone. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good, man. Good evening.
Good evening. It's been a long day. This Eric, I actually did a training on this. I showed the film and the talk about reactions. These were all parents in a parent training class, all of color. I mean, it just wasn't a dry eye because everyone can see themselves and their children, right, so easy. So, you know, it was really an emotional scene going toward the end of our class today. So still reacting from that.
Well, you know what, going back to the video, what is more surprising than what the police did, because that – it's almost becoming a norm, which is what is in part of the title of the show tonight, Eric Garner's Death, Tragic, Senseless, but Norm, is the title of tonight's show. But I think one thing I did not expect was the paramedics' reaction. I'm sorry, the man is in handcuffs, and he's overweight. Shouldn't, first of all, they had taken him out of the handcuffs and allowed her to administer CPR if she was going to do it at all, which in my opinion, it didn't even look like she was going to do it. I mean, well,
yeah.
She didn't do
it. They just didn't see a human being there.
Right.
It's evident, right? Because when you don't value something, right, you don't go to nurture it, right, because it doesn't have a value. And so it was clear they didn't see a human being there. They left him in handcuffs. He's not moving. People, even though the young man was filming it, right, all these cops are still on him, even when he was limp. Even the disregard of the paramedics in them, inside of who these people were, they just didn't see a human being there. And as a result, they saw something of no value. So as a result, it didn't require anything because it didn't have a value to me. So, and that's problematic. And because we have police officers in schools, and that mentality is now patrolling the hallways. And if you don't see value, grown man, you know, I got to wonder, are you going to see it in young children of color? I just got to wonder.
Did anybody besides me question whether or not he was already dead on the ground? Because when they put him on the stretcher, he was limp. And so at one point someone says, aren't you all going to give him oxygen or something? And they say he's breathing on his own. I really don't believe he was breathing at that point. Because
I don't believe it either. I don't.
I think they said, what, Ronald?
I think he was dead, but what they was trying to do, they didn't want to start a riot. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They didn't want to do the right thing, part two. That's
right.
Why they did what they did. But I believe he was dead, too.
Yeah. I think so, too. And I think that, because I think the paramedic, they told her when she came up, and she just played along with him, Mr. Garner. You know, I mean, if you see somebody in that position and they're handcuffed, you know, you would have done more, I would think, if you're trained and I don't know, value your job, care about your profession. I don't know. And it just seemed like she was just detached. You know, she was touching him, but, you know, when she checked for his pulse, I think that was all game. I really do. I'm just sad, like, you know, that they just left him there. But there was a while before paramedics got there. Why didn't the police administer CPR?
None of that. Again, it goes back to value. I was talking to a young person, and we were talking about black-on-black crime. And the question is, why is it so easy for black young people to kill black young people? And one response was, We're told we don't value, right? So we have no value. We have no meaning. So the other person in front of me is a person with no value, has no meaning. So it's easy to shoot because if they look like me and I don't have a value, then I can only make the assumption they don't have none either. So that was one response from a young person. And that's deep when they're saying, if I have no value, the person looks like me, so shooting the trigger is not anything. So, again, it goes back to the reason why everyone's delayed, no oxygen, the whole nonchalant, I got to do something because I'm here, right? It wasn't like there was a dead person on the thing or a life on the ground. I need to do something. My oath to protect and, you know, the oath that they give to medical professionals that, you know, you try to preserve life when you can. All of this, none of that mattered to any of these individuals because they didn't see. As far as he was concerned, he was a piece of gum on the ground. And it was, and it had nothing. And that's very telling of the society that we're in. And it's clearly dangerous because oppressed people always rise, always rebel, always revolt. History has always said that. And if they don't figure this out, and it's going to be tragic because they said, look at the Rodney Kings. It shouldn't have happened. People had everything to say about it. But people get, after a while, it don't matter anymore. You're going to do something about it. And so I don't know what we're going to do as a society, as a country, as a community, but those in leadership need to be paying close attention because it's just a matter of time. I hate to say it, but history tells us it's not a matter if it's going to happen. It's a matter of when it's going to happen. And Rodney King is that very telling. Tulsa. Is that, you know, all those things. Well, anyway, that's my reaction today because it's still so raw that it's another life gone unnecessarily. And even if they thought he was resisting, they said his charge was selling bootleg cigarettes. Bootleg. So let's just play that out. Just play that out that he was selling bootleg cigarettes, a pack of, I don't smoke those. I mean, comes in a pack. And I don't know if you have what you're selling for, 10 cents. I just want to play that out, that all that force for nonviolent crime, even if you want to play that out.
But you know what? I think when you play that out, though, you got to think about there's rapists. There's pedophiles. There's murderers. I mean, there's all types of violent criminals out there. And you think the most, you know, important person to get off the street is the one who's selling bootleg cigarettes?
And
we want to play it out. That's crazy.
Yeah. And he kept saying, "You do this to me all the time." Like, he's like, really? And so again, I think, and you know, I can't speak for him. I don't know what he was thinking. But if you listen to his comments, he was more like, "Really? This is the best you got for this? You know, this is it? Really? You keep doing this to me?" And you know, we can't speak to what was done, and the fact that even the way they reported it. No one mentioned the chokehold. No one mentioned anything. But they're going to find charges. They're going to find his extensive nonviolent crime of selling bootleg cigarettes. That, you know, that makes you feel good to say it. But you thought that was worth a life.
Exactly. Let's go to the phone line. 862-485. Good evening. You're on Center Stage. 862-485. Okay, let me try that again. Okay, 862-485. Good evening, you're on Center Stage.
Yeah, hi, Carrie. How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good, Carrie. Yeah, my name is John Smith. You want me to call for my poem?
Yeah. You did a poem, which I thought was very telling, on Eric Garner. Tell everyone what you wrote about Eric Garner's death.
Oh, well, first of all, you know, The death of Eric Garner is very disturbing. If you watch the tape, the man didn't fight. He was in complete control, and he was just basically executed. He was murdered. If you have to use such force on a man, and you have, you know, five people on the man, he's down on the ground, and he's telling you he can't breathe. And you continue to choke him. I mean, what can you think?
Mm.
So
what I think,
you know,
what I think is if we don't do something, it's going to be, you know, they're going to keep kicking us off until they get us all. I don't know.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, I was told once that a country's foreign policy is the same as their domestic policy, and the same thing they're doing all around the world, bombing Libya, bombing Pakistan, you know, doing all this evil in the world and killing people. They're doing the same thing in our communities.
Right.
And the thing is, they want to just get control, and they want to, you know, people who have no morals or no concern for anything but themselves are just trying to exert themselves and to gain control. And like you were saying earlier on the show, they are trying to create a police state. They're trying to put fear into people. Because how can you watch that tape and not know that man killed that man? Because you were choking that man, and he's telling you he can't breathe. And you stop choking the man then if you have four other men on him that are holding him down. And then, I don't know, there's a second tape after he was executed, and they're just sitting around. You know, he's just lying there limp, and no one's doing CPR. No one's doing nothing to him. They're just things. So it was very disturbing to me, and to, you know, I don't just want to do nothing, because doing nothing isn't gonna solve nothing. You see, doing nothing just emboldens the enemy, and it's sad to say that. I mean, I don't think every police officer out there is our enemy. But the mentality that they go on the streets with is the enemy. That it is like, in all truth, they are occupying our country.
Right. Mm. So that's how you said that. So I always quote, people like to quote Martin Luther King and everything else, but his quotes are from life experiences. And I still believe this still stems around laws, because it's they're hiding behind policies and procedures. And Martin Luther King say, people say, why are you always fighting for policy, Gwen? And I said, because Martin said, the law can't make a man love you, but it can stop him from lynching you. And that's a pretty important thing. So I'm looking at policies that can stop them from this 21st century lynching. Right? Yeah. And that's the stop and frisk. That's these chokeholds that were once policy and not. And I reached out to, even if you think about Trayvon Martin, people say, oh, we got to, glad we did the march and saying we shall overcome. And I said, well, I've overcame. So I don't know. I keep saying you overcoming, but I've overcome. And I'm not going to walk like I'm a victim. I'm going to try to tap into some of these policies that protect their rights in other communities to protect mine. And you can hold systems accountable to that. So there's a policy. I think it was at Harvard. I got to double check the source. But they're called racial impact assessments. And they're actually policy. And what it does, before any lawmaker or legislator, anyone can pass a law, they have to do a racial impact assessment. And what it does, if it targets one population more than another, if it causes the violation of due process or equal protection, then you can't pass the law. And see, that's what Stand Your Ground does. Stand Your Ground, it allowed them to target certain populations. These types of laws that are on the book that these police officers are hiding behind, if you look at them, they would target certain populations more than another, which makes them unconstitutional. So I believe that before these laws continue to be passed from judicial to education, there should be some kind of impact assessment. So those are things I'm trying to see if I can introduce in Connecticut this next session, because it always says, what do you do after you finish marching and singing Kumbaya and you're crying? Once you finish with all of that, what next? So I'm looking for that what next.
I agree.
Well, you could pass a law and says any police officer that commits manslaughter or second-degree murder has to go to jail for life without parole. I mean, pass a law. Like that, it would take a lot to get that passed, but if they're really there to serve and protect,
then they won't be killing folk like that over so-called loose cigarettes. I agree.
But I have a question. Why is it that it seems like it kind of progressed and then got out of control? where police officers are so aggressive today. Why is it that when back in the day a police officer stopped you, you respected his authority and you said, yes, sir, no, sir, officer, he asked you for your information, you gave it to him, and he gave you a ticket or didn't give you a ticket, and the incident was over. Today, something that simple turns into a deadly situation. What happened? And when did we cross over into officers feeling like they approach you in aggressive manners? They talk to you as though you have no rights whatsoever. When did we cross that line?
I think part of the reason is the news and the media, the way they portray everything is that everything is aggressive. They show policemen being hit by cars, helping somebody on the side of the road. They show policemen being attacked. They show all these other things. So you go out with the mentality that that could be me next, or that could be you, just like they do regular people. You know, they show so much stuff on the news. Say, man, I don't want to be in the mall parking lot late. I saw what happened at Walmart the other day. And I think these things play a part on our psyche, which actually helps them to reinforce everything with the police department and reinforce laws, because the news and everything we have is a fear factor.
Now, also, I'm going to piggyback on the media thing, because some of the most popular shows on TV are cop shows. And in the cop shows, they solve the crime at the end of the hour, and it's justified them brutalizing people and violating people's rights. And my thing, I don't understand, when has police ever been friends to black people? Why y'all people are saying the police are good? And when have they ever been a friend to black people? For example, you talk about policy. The governor of Indiana 2 years ago signed into law, Mitch Daniels, who's a Republican, signed into law saying it was okay for citizens to shoot and kill cops if they didn't properly identify themselves. If they felt like their life was in danger, if they came to their home without properly identifying themselves, they could kill them in self-defense. It'll be legal. You can actually kill a cop for self-defense in Indiana and get away with it.
Wow.
That's true. Look it up. Google it up. It's been in law for 2 years.
I believe that. This is the thing. We are not here tonight to talk about, you know, we hate police. What we're here to talk about is we feel like it ought to be some equal respect on both sides. When the officer approaches, we should respect his authority, and at the same time, he should respect us as citizens, you know, of this country and people who have a right to be treated with some degree of respect when he stops us. And as far as the stop and frisk, if there was no such thing as stop and frisk anymore in New York, why did they even stop him? Were they called to the scene that day Eric Garner was stuck, or was it, did they just happen upon him? Was this clear as to whether or not a shop owner called the police?
And to answer your question, they never found cigarettes on him or in his car.
Right.
As far as I read.
You're right. And he said, search me. I don't have anything. I don't have no pack. He says, why y'all keep doing it? And then the cop said something to him. Eric said, oh, because you saying it, it makes it right? You know, he was like, you know, it was just unnecessary. It was so unnecessary, that, you know, I'm sitting here, got my kids, and they got to watch this. And see, sometimes my son's like, Mom, that's not going to happen here. My kids, if something happens, they're thinking that's someplace else. No one is not making the association because, you know, it depends on where you live, and you got to, you know, community that doesn't see as much violence, or until it happens, right? Because it just has to happen, right? There's racial profiling. This exists, racial profiling for a black male. And so, but my son is, you know, he got that Biggie look. I don't know if he was smart or not, but I know my son is smart, but he's husky. He's dark-skinned. And so I have to have those conversations with him that, you know, there would be some perceptions about him as soon as he walked through a door. There will be some assumptions that you can't take away. I just need you to behave a certain way. And so he's like saying, Mom, just, you know, guys, just a joke. Oh, I'm Kevin Hart. No, you're not Kevin Hart. These people pull the triggers around here. They don't, you know, it's hard. It's hard.
Well, the fact that, you know, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Mom.
Now, it's funny that the sister brings up about how to rear your children, because today is the 73rd birthday anniversary of Evan Lewis Till. Yes. His mama probably had the same talk with him when she sent him down to Mississippi. You know, mind your P's and Q's. But his life wasn't worth a damn just for wolf whistling and a white woman. And your life still ain't worth a damn as a black person in this white supremacist system, regardless of what you do. We should never teach our kids to be afraid of people that are supposed to protect and serve us. Like I said, I've been getting pulled by police since I was 11 years old, and I always been myself. I never was nobody. Sometimes I had a sense of humor about it. I mean, I had cops hold their guns, have their hands on their guns at the ready. And I will constantly laugh. I'll tell them who I am, and I'm not afraid of you, okay, because you could get caught up in the system too. But what I'm saying is that we got the wrong way of approaching this. Our kids should not be feeling like that they are the ones guilty just for being themselves.
Right.
Black life does not have any value, and we got to stop empowering this system that does not respect us. Respect
right.
is a two-way street. I'm not going to respect the authority if the authority do not respect my right to exist.
Okay, then let's start there. Let me piggyback off of that. How do you handle yourself today, black person, black woman, white man, white woman, when the police stop you? I mean, I saw what happened on that tape, and I looked at it over and over again. The only thing I saw that I would have done differently had I been him was I would have allowed them to arrest me. But I hadn't been stopped as many times as he'd been stopped and harassed. And trust me, I am experiencing some harassment from Fort Worth PD myself for 3.5 years, but they've never stopped me. But at the same time, the only thing that I saw Mr. Gardner probably could have done, but I don't know if that would have saved his life or not, but that's the only thing I would have done differently. What did he do wrong that day, if anything?
I don't really think you can answer or ask that question when he wasn't at fault, but I understand what you're saying. See, when I first moved to Fort Worth, I got stopped probably 3 times a month by the police.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying I could be driving down the street going north, and the police was going west. And he would see me pass in the car because my locks used to be a lot longer than they are now. He would see me pass in the car and just pull behind me and throw his lights on. And they would always lean real close to the window and say, can I see your driver's license and registration? Like they was inhaling first to see if there was any remnants of smoke in the car. And I don't have any tickets. I never got any tickets. Me and a friend of mine, we got stopped on the way to a porch event. And they pulled up, two police pulled us on the side of the road, and two more police cars came. And they were yelling and screaming to just try to make us say something wrong so we could be arrested for whatever. But the guy I was with was white, and he was, you know, because they have a whole different attitude toward the police, you know, cussing and hollering. I'm like, look, man, you could do all you want to do, and they just going to beat me on the side while you should know they're yelling at him. So we understood that, but I'm saying I know how the police are, and a lot of times they will try and provoke you to say something, to do something.
Right. Yep.
So, but you know, I think he had every right to say, why are you all harassing me? I think he had every right to say, I'm tired of y'all messing with me. I think he had every right to say everything that he said. I never heard him cuss. You know, I heard his voice escalate, but I would have been tired of it, too, if they had been harassing me like that. So besides that, you know, which I probably would have done as well. What I mean, I just couldn't see how that situation should have turned deadly. I think that's what most people are stunned. How did that turn into a deadly situation? He never threw a punch.
We can ask the same about Emmett Till and everybody else, because those are just common things that occur. You whistle at somebody, you look at somebody, or maybe you don't even whistle. You might just say, hey, you know, and they can say you whistle. But the thing is. In this America, we are still 3/5. They have to keep voting on our ability to vote, because it's not a law. It's not in the Constitution. It's an amendment. It's added to it as though, let's see if we want those blacks to vote again in however many years. But I'm saying we have taken for granted that we are a part of this institution called America, when we were never given
everybody else has been paid for whatever they did. You know, when they paid the Chinese, they paid everybody, Italians, they paid everybody if they did wrong, but they couldn't compute the amount of money that they owed us because America was built by us. So I still think that's remnants in their DNA on what's old and how they still have this animosity toward us for whatever reason, because we withstood everything they could throw, so now they're throwing something different. And, you know, I think it's really about us because we disjointed ourselves. We are not a unit. We're not a community. We'd rather individualize and try and be a part of corporate America instead of banding together ourselves and start creating something, because America doesn't make anything anymore, at least not us.
Mm-hmm. There's also another thing. Right. I also think they don't expect us to do anything. Right? Mm. If you think about this, the escalation, the question you asked earlier is, it went from at least respect the authority, respect to I don't have to. I believe as they started to get away with things, right, as those officers blew this blue code, as they started to get away with more and more heinous crimes that if you would do it, you know you get in the electric chair. End of discussion. You know you go into prison, don't collect gold, don't collect $200. But when it comes to law officers, they're able to hide behind the role of an officer. They're able to hide around all these other things, I guess, associated with police officers. But the most important thing is they say, hey, what are y'all prepared? What are you going to do about it? I watched the movie Untouchables, and the guy, Mr. I forgot the one with the accent, he was like, what are you prepared to do?
Right.
So until we answer that question, what are we prepared to do? I'm not advocating violence. That's not what I'm saying. We got to be prepared to do something. Until we say it's not okay to kill our babies like this. And the fact is we're gonna mourn now, we're going to cry, we're going to march, we're going to put the T-shirts on and the banner, and then we're going to go back to business as usual next week.
I think what we got to do is stop doing what we keep doing each time, because when they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome.
That's right.
That's exactly what we do. Every time somebody dies, it's like a blueprint. We pull out the blueprint and we do exactly the same thing. And after 2 weeks, everybody goes back to their perspective corners and nothing happens. And I think that's what we're doing wrong. We'll write a petition. We'll say we're angry. We'll get a couple of thousand signatures on it. We'll go and march in the street, and nothing happens. What are we doing wrong? What should we be doing?
You're not defending yourself. That's what we ain't doing. Like, this week marks the 114th anniversary of the New Orleans race riots of 1900, which was started because a black man named Robert Charles was waiting for his girlfriend outside her home, and the police was harassing him down in New Orleans. And they tried to take his life, and he took their lives. He took several police officers' lives. And the cause of white folks throughout the, you know, Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, they all came to New Orleans to kill any black person they could see, just to get one black man. But the fact that he stood up for his rights means a lot. You know, you think about Bishop Henry Turner, the very prominent 19th century black leader out of Georgia. He talked about self-defense. You think about Robert Williams out of Monroe, North Carolina. He talked about self-defense. We're not talking about initiating anything, but you do have a right to defend yourself. It is not cool for them to have this type of free pass to kill our men, women, and children. We are afraid to say what needs to be done. Well, Malcolm said, by any means necessary, I'm tired of hearing black folks say, I don't mean violence. Well, this country speaks the language of violence. We export violence. That's our number one commodity, violence. So what are you talking about? You're not American unless you're talking about violence. Our national anthem is written in violence. Read the lyrics. So you're not American if you don't speak the talk of the gun, okay? You might not like their reality, but let's just get real with it. It might take a couple of generations for us to really wake up, because I thank God that that young brother, whoever he was, Ortiz, whatever the guy named, took a picture of that, because people were critical of him, saying, why didn't he try to help Mr. Gardner? No, he knew his role, just like the black press knew their role in the Emmett Till travesty. Everybody can't be a soldier. Some people could be a reporter. Some people could be this and that. You got to know your role. One time it was a thing in the movement. Dr. King was leading a movement, a march, and it was a photographer. He saw a young black kid getting beat up by the police. He tried to intervene, between the police and the young black kid. Dr. King screamed at the man. He said, look, that's not your job. Your job is to photograph that so the rest of the world can see what's going on, how much hell we catching. Okay? Your job is not to stop the police from being that little boy, but your job is to catch that for posterity, to disseminate that throughout the world, let them know what is really going on with us in America. And a lot of us don't know our role. A lot of us think that our role is just to sit passively back. I hear people say, well, they're going to get off. They don't have to get off. They don't have to make it to trial. I'm just saying. Things happen to everybody. And like Godfather 3 said, like the guy said, one thing he learned from history that anybody could be killed. Nobody's
right.
above God's laws, okay? So everybody got their day.
That's true. That's true.
Well, that line.
Say what?
The thing I wanted to add was that, see, we are so, America and even us as a people, we've just become
mm-hmm.
reactionary automatically. We only react. There's nothing set in place to actually safeguard anything. We wait till something happens, and that's when we react to it. But
right.
we see these
mm-hmm.
things constantly occurring, and we see... We talk about how can we stop it, but first of all, as a mass unit, we can stop some of everything because nobody's going to attack this whole unit when it's more than two or three people there.
Right.
When you rally as a community and as a unit of people, everybody say, okay, now what's the problem? Now they want to talk. But we wait till something happens, then we get all these people together with these signs and posters and T-shirts and, you know, and then we look like we're about something. But when it's over, we leave and we disband. It's like, when are we going to come together and stay together?
Mm. And that's true. And you know what? You know, as far as civil rights organizations, you know, we don't do that no more. I mean, there's some that exist, but, you know, there is no unity. You know, as Queen Latifah used to say, U-N-I-T-Y, there is no unity if these types of situations keep occurring. That young man's name was Ramsey Orta. And I say to everybody, pray for Ramsey Orta. I mean, because the courage that it took for that young man to do that, most folks ain't doing it. I mean, most folks ain't doing it. And so the fact that he did, he said since then, he's been harassed by police. So I say to anybody, prayers go up tonight for Ramsey Orta. You know, and may God, you know, protect that brother because he did what he did because he saw what they did to his friend was wrong. And he came out.
Yes. Yep, you're right. You are right with that. And you hear him, like, give us some oxygen. You know what I mean? He felt helpless. You can, even though he's filming, you know how when you feel like you don't know what to do, you can't do anything. You can hear that in his voice of, like, this is not supposed to be. Someone help him. He can't breathe. Right. You know, and I can only... see that. It's like someone seeing an accident and you can't get to it, right? You can't lift the car up or you can't, you know, and you can hear this sense of urgency. And, you know, mess around with me, he should maybe have a line of whatever his name is, police phones, right? These would be special phones that got nothing but plenty of memory to film this stuff. That's the only way we're going to be able to help ourselves. We'll have these phones. He said everybody should have a phone when it comes around the video. I think that's what he said in the video. Everyone, what we can do is arm ourselves with these cell phones to film it. I think that's what he said in one of his segments. And that's his way of thinking. He's saying how he can help against it.
Well, tell me this. How is it that two people were fighting and Aaron Garner breaks up the fight, but somehow he's the person that's the police target and not the two people that were involved in the fight? How do you get there? How do you, as a police officer, come to a scene and not be interested in the two people that were fighting, but are interested in the person who broke up the fight because they may be selling loose cigarettes? How do you get there?
But the familiarity of harassment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, when you're used to harassing somebody, you say, okay. And that's what I'm saying, because every time I would stop, the policeman would say something. They would say something off kilter to invoke a response. But when you don't respond, they pause and they think of something else. Okay, that didn't work. But they just want to respond so they can actually, you know, because if they don't like you, usually all you hear is what the person said to the policeman, not what the policeman said in whispers to him.
This is what I say. Again, because I'm someone who's been harassed, But my lesson is a little less aggressive, let's just say, but nonetheless it's harassment. And I, again, applaud Mr. Order for taking that videotape, and I say to anybody who sees me being detained, please do the same thing. But at the same time, it's got to stop. Like Eric Garner said that day, it stopped today. I agree with that. Someone had on some article that that's a movement. It stopped today. And I think at some point, we as a community, and not just black, but white, brown, whatever other race you want to name, we've got to realize it's got to stop today because, in my opinion, what I see happening down the road, if we continue at this rate, eventually this causes a revolution where it always does, where people eventually get tired, and it's kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back, and then all of a sudden it's bloodshed in the street and it's officers against civilians. It shouldn't be like that because it doesn't have to come to that. You know, and that's what I'm so concerned about, our politicians and our police chiefs and our governors and our mayors. Why are we letting this thing escalate to the point where this is happening in every community and no one is across the board saying it's stopped? Even, to the White House down. At some point, when do you say enough is enough?
Well, I don't think the politicians care anything about the people, because all the power has been taken out of the people's hand and put into the hands of the corporations who fund all the politicians' monies. As far as affecting politics, I mean, you can do it on a local level. You can do things in my hometown of Montclair. If they don't like something, one time they're going to build a hotel that was too high and 100 people showed up at the town meeting and the town backed down. But the farther you get away, on the county level it's harder, on the state level it's harder, and then on the national level it gets harder and harder. So for people to really change things, you need a mass movement. You just can't have pockets here and there. They protested the war in Gaza, where Israel's committing genocide in Gaza, and over 10,000 people in Chicago protested and filled the streets, you know, as far as you could see, and it got no press coverage.
But one thing I want people to watch is, like right now in the Metroplex in Dallas-Fort Worth, they just arrested a couple of city councilmen, and it's a friend of mine out of Dallas. And they arrested him. They got 13 charges on him. FBI arrested him. But if you look at all the things he's done in the community, a lot of times when you are a community organizer, see, right now assassinations are out. They can trump up charges and have anything brought up on you just to make you look bad, because if they dirty your name, then, that's what I'm saying, this media has control of people's minds, the mass media, I'm saying, internet, streaming media, tweeting, whatever. They can put out a campaign to make you look bad, and regardless, even those that know you will think that you are now the person that the media said you are.
Right. But it's interesting
I agree. They can build you up to tear you down. I agree. And I think you met not city council member, but county commissioner.
Who?
County
no.
commissioner? No?
Yeah, county commissioner, yeah.
Okay. I think where we're at is this. I think it starts on a local level and it goes up. And I think people have got to start going to the city council meeting, because, again, people, the city council, the mayor, and the city manager, those are the people who hire police. For those who don't know, your city manager, your city mayor, and your city council, at least where we are, that's who hires our police. I think you got to start showing up at the city council meetings and saying, listen, we don't agree with what our police department is doing, and we demand change. And I think you need to basically have standing room only in your city council meeting across the country and demand change from your police department. And if it's a police officer, you know, and you can't get any change for there, then you need to get a new police chief. I mean, you got to start demanding change on that type of level and go from there to your elected officials. If your city council can't take them out, then the city, you need a new city council. If your mayor can't take them out, then you need a new mayor.
Right. But
and I think you have to start looking at it. I'm sorry, Glenn?
Go ahead. No. I was just piggybacking what you were saying here. But I think it's more than just going there and say you demand change, because they'll come with that feel-good, okay, you got to have 3 hours of diversity training. right? So I think if we leave it in their hands to define change, we'll be in the same boat. I think we need to, as we mobilize, right, because the people perish for a lack of a vision. So you have to give them something. So what are the solutions we want? What is it that we want the council to do? What is it that we want? For instance, for me, if you Google me, you'll see I talk about these racial impacts because they keep – it's these policies. Like, if the my hands are tied. Well, this is the law. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm able to choke you. I'm able to violate you with the black baton. Even though there's no law that says that, they're able to hide behind these policies. So we have to make sure these policies can't get on the books in the first place. Right? And so there has to be a mechanism there. So if we're going to mobilize, what is it that you want the people to do? People, you know, they try to mobilize. They get there, and then we go back home. Because it wasn't clear on what is it the action step that you want to do. So if you got an action, is it? Be very clear, right? I want change. And then what does that change need to look like?
Well, I think it starts, just like Carrie was saying, it starts at the lower level because until we actually, you can't build a city until you work on your neighborhood.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start in the grassroots in the neighborhood and you see change coming,
Well, I'm on Twitter now, so it looks like as we're talking, they got New York City protests going on. It looks like a whole bunch of things is happening. I've just been tweeting everyone to join us on the call, so I've just been going down live. I'm putting my theory out there. Well, yeah, so it's something happening.
Did you drop out, AJ?
No, I was waiting for that defense. Now, the only point I was making is when we start on the grassroots level in our neighborhood, it's not like a neighborhood watch. I'm saying like the neighborhood go to all the city council meetings, and anytime something's going on and anytime there's something downtown or whatever's going on with any of the elected officials, you show up. So now they're noticing that I can't just come out here and say nothing, just kind of like when Mitt Romney was running for president, he had this little meeting where somebody videoed take him saying that we're just beggars, we're nothing, and all these other things, but nobody else was at the meeting. So a lot of times we don't know meetings are going on, but I think we need this coalition to say that we need to be involved in everything that's going on. If they're voting on the street lights, bumps in the street, whatever they're voting, chains in the school, different tests, we need to be at those meetings to have a representative to say, okay, I'm representing us. I'm representing the people because we've lost the people's representation except for we're voting for president. We don't vote for other elected officials or every 2 years we don't vote for senators and House of Representatives. And that's the main meat of what we need, how you make change. When they see that you're an advocate and that you're participating in this electoral process, it changes the way they come out and what they talk about.
I agree.
Right.
And you know what? I'll go here with you. We gotta stop making people who are willing to be courageous the ones that have their heads in the crosshairs. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, some of the others, Rosa Parks, who were courageous enough to stand up back in the day. You know, we don't have those people today because you know what? When they look back, nobody's standing with them.
Right.
So just like we're having this discussion tonight, you know what? For everybody that thinks they cannot come knocking at your door, you are so wrong and you are so in denial. And I think every time we take for granted that that's somebody else's problem, you're fooling yourself. I think
right.
If you got a child, if you got a husband, if you got a wife, if you got a daughter, it can happen to you. And I think that's where I think that is where we're so lost on that thing. I mean, Eric Gardner. Oh, I am the Eric Gardner. You are Eric
right.
Gardner. And I think tonight we got to realize that. And I think when he said it stopped today, you know what? Like someone said in one of those articles, that's a freaking movement. Because at the end of the day, he lost his life for nothing. So
right.
You can't say, well, I'm a law-abiding citizen. I don't commit crimes, so therefore it couldn't happen to me. You're so wrong. And I think it makes my heart heavy tonight because I see those type of responses on Facebook and on Twitter. Oh, well, he sold cigarettes or he used to sell marijuana or he did this. What was he doing that day, though? He was
right.
Breaking up a fight.
But what was he doing that day? What I was making is that consistent harassment because, see, there's always a straw that breaks the camel's back. It just matters who keeps putting the straw in there. So as long as they keep saying the little things and whispering the little things, and every time they see you, they say something smart or something funny, and you've let it slide so many times, they know that consistently you're going to retaliate or say something that will actually make them, you know, give them reason. It's like, you know, like Master, you say, give me a reason, boy. Give me a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are now. It's like, give me a reason. Just say something back, and I'll say that you were resisting arrest after I grab you, or after I push you, mm-hmm. or after I get right in your face.
Or after they got you down the ground, they're screaming, stop resisting arrest, and you got your hands behind your back, and they're screaming, stop resisting arrest. Or if they're reaching for you in the car, and they're screaming, stop reaching for my gun, and you got your hands raised up. It can happen to you. And I think we need to stop being in denial. We've seen videotapes like that on YouTube all the time. It can happen to you. And I think that's where we need to realize that it's time to stop just writing petitions. You know, they're great. But at the same time, I think it's time to elect people. I think it's time to bring certain people out of office. I think it's time for a changing of the guard. When people don't respect the people, it's time for new people. Period.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Start with your neighborhood.
Yes.
And make it a city.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think everybody has gotten, and I'm just going to put it out there, I've never seen such scary men in my life. I'm sorry.
Yes,
the next movie will be started by women. Y'all know it's true. Men are more afraid than women. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. And y'all know I'm not lying. Somebody will say there's going to be a rally. And the next thing you'll hear is all the men in the background going, well, I got tickets. I can't go down there. Or, you know, I got a case coming up. And you're like, are you serious? Are you scared to go down there just because you got some tickets? But
you know something's wrong when, do you remember when they were talking about immigration? I don't know if this was last year or the year before. And all those illegal immigrants walked the street. They were California. They flooded. They're illegal. Here we are, born in Jersey, and scared to walk down the street. And these people, I'm not knocking, I'm not talking about immigrant issue, but they knew they weren't in the country legal. And they flooded the streets, babies and families and all. And we live up the street,
skip
born in
school.
Jersey.
Skip school to go. It's crazy. We're looking at this thing all wrong. Fear, first of all, is not of God, okay? They can't kill you but one time. And I'm sorry, if you go into it thinking like that, you already defeated. I mean, I'm sorry. When you take and you think about Eric Gardner and all those others that went before him and all those that will follow him, you know, I'm sorry. Everybody's got a role in this. That's all I'm saying. Don't have one or two people with frog hairs on their head. Everybody get up and stand up and say something. Everybody. Listen, if you just tuned in tonight, you'll see the center stage. We're talking about the Eric Garner story. In Staten Island, a week ago Thursday, Mr. Gardner was killed while he was in the custody of the New York Police Department. They put him in what is considered a banned chokehold, and Mr. Gardner lost his life. Mr. Garner lost his life, and many are questioning why. Why did he have to die? They accused him of having loose cigarettes or selling loose cigarettes, and there were no cigarettes found on him. The paramedics showed up, and they didn't even bother to perform CPR or even give the man oxygen. So many are wondering how many Eric Garners will there be before we get changed? That's what we're looking into tonight, y'all. When? What do we have to do to get change?
Well, you know,
if you have a question or a comment tonight, get on the phone line, 347-850-8390. Again, the number to call is 347-850-8390.
Yeah, I was thinking, I got so many things in my mind just listening to y'all talking. I just recently came back from Jackson, Mississippi to cover an oral argument before the Mississippi Supreme Court about Curtis Flowers. Curtis Flowers is the first person in U.S. judicial history to be tried six times in a capital murder trial on the same evidence. All the evidence that he was tried upon and sent to death row was circumstantial. Nothing tied him to the scene of the quadruple homicide. No fingerprints, no nothing. He didn't even own the quote-unquote gun that was used, and the guy that owned the gun never been questioned. But he was the only one that went to jail for these crimes. I mean, his last trial was in 2010. He'd go to jail, the death row, with a jury with no none of his peers on the jury, right, with no evidence tying him to the scene of the crime, and he's sitting on death row right now as we speak, this 44-year-old black man. So you look at Eric Gardner, you look at Curtis Flowers, you look at all these, I talk to people involved in the case, a lot of them afraid to talk about it, even family members, because one of his brothers looked just like him. I said, brother, could easily be you on death row. And he started laughing uneasily about it. But I'm saying, but people are so afraid to talk about injustice. And I'm tired of all these black men hiding behind these black women's skirts in terms of revolutionary rhetoric. These hotel brothers, they talk all this rhetoric and this intellectual masturbation. Ain't doing nothing because your results speak for you. You don't have to tell me you're a Christian when you're doing stuff that a Christian should do. That's you don't have to tell me anything about you. I'm looking at not only what you say, but what you do and what you don't do. But my problem is right now in this thing, we lying to ourselves if we think that we don't have to have a type of response to what they're doing to us. Because for every action, there's a reaction. And revolutions are never started by revolutionaries. They're started by reactionaries.
Right.
They're started by the people. And change comes through a small group of committed few. Minorities make change. I ain't talking about the minority. Like they talk about the people that rule the world are in the minority. The people that start revolutions, that win revolutions, are in the minority. It's always a small group of committed people that actually get things done for everybody else. Like you talk about it 50 years later, you think that everybody was in the movement with Dr. King. It was only a small percentage of black folks that actually participated in the civil rights movement that benefited the majority of black people. Jimmy Jackson, Bloody Sunday, right, back in the civil rights movement, that happened because Jimmy Jackson lost his life trying to stop a state trooper from beating up his grandfather and his mama. A young black man lost his life to try to defend his black family, and that's why we got the Voting Rights Act, okay? It's people putting their lives on line. Like when their sister was getting beat up by the highway patrolman in California, even if some of us got to die, it got to stop. Because once they realize we're willing to die for what we want, we're willing to die for our human dignity, they're going to have to stop doing it. But like Dr. King said, a man ain't willing to die for anything, he ain't fit for living anyway. You already dead.
Just by what you're saying, I'm online. So I was Googling how much a loose cigarette costs, right? Because I'm shook, right? Because this man is dead. And let's look at the cost of his crime, shall we? So I'm on the New York Times page. I Google loose cigarette, how much a loose cigarette costs. You can buy one for 75 cents or two for a dollar. So I Google how many in a pack. So let's say he had a pack at $25 and he sell two for one. This man lost his life for less than $12. I'm giving him a pack now. I'm going to give him a whole pack. Let's just say that is the crime. Let's give him one because police just got to give him one. He lost his life. His people, his wife lost a husband. His children lost a father. His family lost a loved one for less than $13. If you want to add tax on it, it's about $13.50. I give him $50. I give him tax. He lost his life. This is what they were willing to take his life for. If that's the crime they're saying, he said he did it. So let's give him that crime. And the $12.50, that's all they, it was, to them, it was worth, he was so no of a value, so non-factor, that they took this man's life.
And see, I think, I'm still kind of stuck that a lot of, I think they were just, they were tired of seeing him free. Because they kept harassing him, kept picking him up. There was nothing to hold him on.
Right.
So they were saying, okay, you got cigarettes, you got something on you. They were just trying to stick something on it. You don't have to be free. You're going to spend the night in jail somewhere. So I think they were trying to send him free. So it was one of those things where they were just doing what they always did. They just had cameras on them this time.
You know what, y'all? We're going to go to this song this young man wrote about Eric Garner, Steph, and it's very profound because you can hear the frustration in the young man's voice as he rapped about what happened to Eric Garner. Y'all tell me y'all's thoughts about this song, but I thought the young man really poured out how he really felt about what happened to Eric Garner.
Want to hear my poem now, Gary?
Say what?
Gary? You want to hear the poem now?
Just...
Oh.
Don't know much about you, gotta stick up information. You was a metal man that broke up a physical confrontation. The NYPD showed up and now they got you facing. Down on the ground, not breathing, you asphyxiated. They had no clue what was going on, so they pointed fingers. Now they're the target and started to tangle that different thing. You both throw hands up in the air, you bad act and say. And I'll harass and talk today, who do you care to be? They yell and put your hand behind your back and grab your neck. But you can't do it because they measured it with their fucking legs. They place the pin on your back and put their hand on your head. You singing, I can't breathe, they born in college day. Okay, you blind, you laying life, you put them counterfeit. Ain't have nobody seeing this, we supposed to serve and protect. Cause we depend on foul shit and it's a mess. We just committed murder, now we gotta face the press. He had a track record of selling six without a pack. Had one assault, maybe you fight, don't see no harm in that. But now you're going for something simple, that's a known fact. Unlike the men that don't have the camera to have their back. You sad to say, but you the black dude, drive the king. Except your life to go home, it ended at the scene. I hope the people took the court, I'm poking through some brain. The judge killed them all like I know it was just a dream. They gon' try to use your past to justify their actions, but it twists the camera telling you what really happened. R.I.P. Big E, the situation tragic. I just hope you get some justice. I'll be standing in class. Yeah. Yes, my
by Biggie, I'm sorry, about the death of Eric Garner.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the young man made a lot of valid points. I mean, he really did. So you decide. I'm sorry, and you were saying you were going to put the poem on. I'm sorry. I had already gone to the song. Sure, go ahead and do the poem that you wrote for Eric Garner now.
Oh, okay. And listen, y'all, I put an ending on it, a new ending. Well, not new, and added some more lines. Okay.
Okay.
So here we go. This is called Executed Without Trial, Alleged Crime Selling Cigarettes by John Konecki. Eric Garner, I watched you die. No loving farewells, no last goodbye. Simply hanging out on the street, getting hassled by the heat. I'm tired of you messing with me, a sentiment many say honestly, 'cause in America, it's a sin to have darker skin. Eric Garner, you were assassinated. Oh, how much you were hated. 'Cause those there to serve and protect showed contempt and no respect. Eric Garner, I watched you die. But hear this anguish cry. Let it be known you did not die alone. For in that choking hate, so died my hope for the state. Eric Garner, we shall not forget. Another Emmett Till to regret. Eric Garner, I watched you die, but now is not the time to cry. They killed you in a hurry, denied you a fixed jury. Now is the time to fight. Now is the time to make it right. We have a solution. Its name is revolution. Eric Garner, I watched you die. The question is why. I know the answer, and so do you, sir. Racism is an institutionalized thing, my friend, and it's high time to bring it to an end. Agree with me when I say it's got to end today.
Wow. Is that posted? Is that posted anywhere?
Yeah, that's, I can. Let's see. I can put it on my. I have a site. It's called John's Poem.
You want to post it on my Facebook?
Yeah, I'll post it right now. Yeah, I'll put it there, and then I'll put a link on your Facebook page to where. Hold on, I'll get there.
Thank you. So I can go on a Facebook and Twitter frenzy. Yeah, I just. Yeah. Right.
There's all sorts of pieces and artwork about Eric Garner, and so many people are touched by his death. I mean, it's amazing. You know, typically, you know, it'll take a couple of weeks for people to start really jumping on board. But I think so many people can connect to the fact that we are all Eric Garner. And just like it happened to him, it could happen to us. And I think that's just what's so interesting about this particular story is that when you look at it, if you could say he was doing something specifically, you say, oh, well, that's why he died. But, you know, the police officers are saying it was because he was overweight or because he resisted arrest. But to the rest of us, we still don't understand how he died from that encounter or why he had to die from that encounter. You know, I didn't know a chokehold could be that deadly until I thought about how it was administered. He jumped on the guy's back and took him to the ground. The guy is 350 pounds. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine how much pressure it took for him to take him to the ground?
But if you listen to Ray, I mean the young male who filmed it, he was saying it. He's talking. He says the eyes are rolling behind the back of the head. The mouth is foaming. Right? So people are seeing this thing. So clearly what was occurring right there on the spot, and they just left him there like it was just, I don't know.
I think I'm amazed, though, that as an officer, this particular officer who administers the chokehold, his name, which I have, and I have some very interesting thoughts about him as well, this particular young man had been in trouble before. I mean, so I'm amazed that it's always the ones that kill someone who already have problems that the police department never seems to address. That's always amazing to me. That the problem child, his name is Daniel Pantaleo. Daniel Pantaleo. Pantaleo. Anyway, he had problems before. He had several lawsuits against him for civil rights violations. Why is it always those are the ones that always end up killing somebody? You know, and I guess it goes back to scripture, warning comes before destruction. There's always a flashing caution sign that there's something wrong with this particular officer and he needs to be looked at more closely or maybe put on death duty or whatever. But why is it that they continue to put these people out on the street? What is really going on?
Yep, it says this same officer, I'm reading it, this same guy, they said he was stripped of his gun, he was stripped of his badge, he was once accused of strip searching, all this old crazy stuff. They see that, and this is what's happening, if you think about what's happening in the schools, when some people ignore the warning signs, the people who lose it, if you will, for lack of a better term. You know, you read the signs, we hear the signs, and we ignore the signs. This man, clearly from some of the stuff he was saying, was just, shouldn't be carrying a gun or a badge. Just shouldn't because of ethical issues. And they're numerous, not isolated in time.
But he's been stripped of his gun and his badge now and put on death duty. But, you know, what about when he got, you know, sued for those, you know, two civil rights violations? Why wasn't he taken and put on death duty then, you know, to determine, does this guy have a problem? I mean, I'm really starting to wonder, you know, I know a lot of times when you join a police force, they'll take you through a psych evaluation. I'm starting to question, should these guys be going through routine psych evaluations because is it something about the job that causes so many to lose it? And have, like, murder in their eyes? I mean, what is going on? Is something being said in roll call? Are they being brainwashed to be this aggressive? What is going on?
Well, they said last he had, it was two young men Derek Collins and Atami Rice, who filed a complaint against this officer because they strip searched Mr. Pantaleo strip searched them in public, pulled their pants down and slapped their testicles. The Civil Rights Complaint Review Board. The Civil Rights Complaint Review Board could not substantiate the claim. Of course, there will be no care. It's public now. No cameras, no bank, ATM machine that films the surrounding areas, no store with a camera outside, no light, no traffic light with a camera on. This was done in public, and they just could not substantiate it. Just amazing.
Well, you know what? Is it, whether they say they can substantiate it or not, you can have video footage and they still get off today. So I don't know if that's... Yeah.
Yeah,
we don't know what's going to happen with this video footage from Eric Garner. And, you know, to us is very telling, but who knows? They may come back and say he was totally within his rights because Mr. Garner resisted arrest. You know, so it's breathtaking because I have brothers. You know, I have uncles. You know, I can't just say it's all about males anymore. As a female, you know, I don't want to be stopped. I mean, I don't want them stopping me because even though I think I know how to handle a stop, I would prefer not being stopped. I really would because I don't trust the outcome. And that's sad to say. I've never had
it. This is what they're saying. So this Mr. Pantelli's union, so they put Mr. Mm-hmm. Pantelli on desk duty. They removed his gun and badge. But the other officers with him, one other one they said, they're naming him unnamed, leaving him unnamed. He's keeping his gun and badge. But the unions are saying that Mr. Pantelio's reassignment is completely unwarranted and a knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah.
You would think he was talking about riding the bike. Like, you know, you took the boy's PlayStation. That was completely unwarranted and knee-jerk. You would think he was talking about a PlayStation. The way that he's doing this. Not that there's a man dead. And let's just err on the side of caution. Let's follow procedure, maybe there is no procedure, you know, to show that we are impartial and we're doing due diligence. The union doesn't even want to think like that. It says this is unwarranted and knee-jerk. So that's what's going to start riots. It's
mm-hmm.
statements like that that will mm-hmm. incite. Those non-callous, he wasn't a human being, he doesn't matter, therefore he doesn't warrant an investigation, is what will cause riots in this country.
You know, one thing that matters is the way the words matter. That's what people understand. Words matter. So when they write it in such a calm fashion, the people that don't know the story want to know the story because of what's
mm-hmm.
written. Just like the Trayvon case. Trayvon, the story was hushed for a while. Even though the story was out there, it didn't pick up steam to radio shows, and everybody started putting it out there with a whole different language as far as what happened, not the niceties that was written initially, as though this guy was in his neighborhood watch. So it matters how they say it. So the police write up the paperwork that way to sound as though, oh, this is just the common thing that happens, when it's an uncommon thing that happened, but it's a constant occurrence in our community. But when people read it that way, they don't see it as being the atrocity or the tragedy that it is, because it doesn't read that way. And we're not readers anyway.
But see, I don't want a police department that when an officer kills a person, that's a big deal. I don't want a police department that the police chief scrambles and gets to the bottom of why it happened. One of our local police departments down here recently changed a rule that I totally disagree with. The chief said, he said that basically when there is a situation involving a police shooting, that he was going to give the police officer 3 days to write the report.
Okay.
Because yeah, this is so true. And AJ can tell you I'm not lying. And he's going to give him 3 days to write the report because, now this is the catcher. He said, because when there's a police shooting, you know, it takes several days for the officer to, I guess basically it's kind of like an out-of-body experience, if you will. So it takes him like, I'm paraphrasing, but like 3 days to get back in his body and put all the facts together.
Right.
I'm just saying like that's I'm paraphrasing y'all, but and I thought, well, what happens if I shoot somebody? They're not gonna give me 3 days to tell them what happened. They're gonna want to know immediately what happened, who came in, who did what, and then why did you shoot? And so,
what about the lady in Florida that fired the warning shot?
Say what?
I said, what about the lady in Florida that fired a warning shot and went to jail?
Okay.
Yeah.
The Florida lady. The Florida lady. I can't think of her name right now. Yeah, the Florida lady.
Marissa Alexander.
And she was, what's her name? Marissa Alexander.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she was just denied a new trial. Understand your ground. So I think, you know, we're going backwards with this thing. I mean, we're going so backwards with this thing because, you know, if police want us to trust them, and if they want us to respect them and their authority to be in the position that they are, we got to have some transparency. We got, you know, you got to be able to say I shot and killed somebody because they were coming at me and I was fearful for my life. You can't just say you shot and killed somebody and it's going to take you 3 days to tell us why.
Right, and this is what they're saying in the newspaper, just what you're saying. Talking about, I guess, the mayor, de Blasio,
mm-hmm.
and saying that he's trying, you know, it was just said that he was trying to improve the relationship between officers and the city's minorities communities because a person said, we are the only ones in the social setup that has to deal with fear of cops, you know, and robbers. I guess that's a police officer. That's someone saying that. I think a black person said, we not only have to fear, you know, robbers or whatever, we have to fear the cops too, cops and robbers,
yeah.
They're saying.
Yeah.
But so it's just the whole thing. And they said this was another lawsuit. The chokehold was in 1994 where another officer of their badge, a Fracio or someone, he was stripped because of the same thing. He said, they said Francis Lavati was dismissed from the New York PD and convicted by a federal jury of violating the civil rights of a Bronx man who died after the apparently use of a chokehold in 1994. He said he denied using the chokehold, that the guy died of an asthma attack. And this is what some of the police officers are saying on the blogs, these very nasty comments from officers that, you know, he was overweight and fat, and that's why he died. He died because he's overweight. You know, he died from this and this. And I think they're going to try to make the same argument that they're choking this man to death. It wasn't the choke that put his head behind his, put his eyes in his head and made him froth at the mouth. It was an asthma attack, I guess they're going to say.
You know, I think I made a difference with that assessment. I think I would say that he was 300, you know, probably in excess of 350 pounds. However, you know, he probably would not have died had they not attempted to take him into custody for absolutely nothing. So why are none of the articles saying nothing was found on Mr. Gardner? Why is that not being reported? That they detained him, they attempted to, or they did, you know, put him in handcuffs, but they found nothing.
And what's not
sure that video tape's not been recording, they probably would have found something. What do y'all think?
But Terry, if you were wrong, just like just say for example a relationship, you tell your side of the story first.
Right.
Get it out there as many times as you can, so when the other side of the story comes, it sounds like a falsehood because you was believing what you heard the first time.
Yeah.
Right.
You're probably. But you know what? You can tell it any which way you want. That videotape tells it all.
Right.
I mean,
I saw it. They had the second video on. You know, the first video shows where he gets killed, and then the second video I saw where they stand around and do nothing. Now, I was watching I saw an article, and it just had the second video, but it referred to the first video, and it said that Mr. Eric Gardner took a fighting stance when the police, you know, did what
right.
he did.
Right, that's what I'm reading, too. I'm reading those, he was irate. He, you know, like, in other words, officers were fearing for their lives. They had to save, they saved themselves from this man who has been convicted of violent crimes in the past of selling loose cigarettes two for a dollar. He is just ready to get them out.
Yeah, I mean,
so
you can't.
That's who trained officers. In force, you know, they have, you know, force trained how to what do you call it? How to basically take a person down with force. So they're trained in this manner, and they also have two guns, but they're afraid of him. Things are different with him. But okay, I'm just that's crazy.
I think he was exceptionally calm for the circumstance. I mean,
yeah. Hello?
Exceptionally calm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe he was calm considering it because, you know, I would like to think, I would know what I would say. He was surrounded. That was clear. And let's say they got two. There was about five officers, so that was 10 firearms with whatever, how many bullets got in the guns on top of tasers, whatever else they got. And the only thing he has been charged with, I'm reading again, they haven't mentioned no violent crimes in his past. The only thing, these famous Lucy cigarettes, first it was Skittles and tea over there for a dollar, and over here we got two for a dollar, cancer sticks.
And
everybody
he was never convicted. I don't think he was ever convicted. He was just charged.
Right.
And theoretically, we're all innocent until proven guilty, theoretically. Mm-hmm.
They're all innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
Well, that's the theory. I mean,
not
the theory.
Because we're going to jail until we get a lawyer.
Got that right.
We're just going to be in jail. A lot of us are going to just be in jail.
And
we can't afford
more. Because the court appointed ain't going to do nothing.
Well, it's going to be overbooked, though. Like, public defenders, to be fair to them, a lot of them don't have enough time to prepare for the cases that they're understaffed. So this set up to lose by it's like the Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals. Harlem Globetrotters, the system always going to win for the most part, and this is not the Washington Generals. They're always going to lose. And
when you're eating lunch, while he's talking to you, like this is his first meal, then it's the only time he can talk because everybody else is paying.
This reminds me this case. I mean, this is like to me, it bothers me. I'm not saying I'm just taking it all in. I can still remember when Oscar Grant went down on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
And then and all this footage, cell phone cameras, everything, went viral. And the guy that killed Oscar Grant is out of jail, and the city of Oakland was not even liable. Like, the family lost the lawsuit. Because I can remember when they rioted, because Ron Dellums, who was a civil rights icon in his own right, who was the mayor of Oakland, did not even have a press conference when the Oscar Grant situation went down initially. So the black people of Oakland rioted. But what came out of that? Yeah, you had a great movie, Fruit Bound Station, last year, a lot of emotion, but the family lost the lawsuit. And the guy who killed Oscar Grant is free, but what people don't understand is a couple months later, Lavelle Mixon, a young black man, killed four cops, including SWAT team members. Because he said he told his uncle at a traffic stop, I'm not going back to jail. This is a brother at 26 years old. He said, to hell with it. If I got to go to hell, I'm taking your son with me. Okay? And we don't want to talk about Lavelle Mixon. We don't want to talk about Robert Charles. We don't want to talk about Robbie Cookie Thornton out in the St. Louis area. We don't want to talk about the folks that fought back, okay, because we're afraid. We don't want to talk about the Howard Johnson shooter. New Orleans, Mark Exis, back in the early 70s, New Orleans. He killed a lot of cops. He killed so many cops. It was more than one person killing them. The Howard Johnson shooter. So we don't talk about the folks that fought back. We always think that we're just taking shit all the time. Excuse me. So we had folks that fought back. My great-grandfather shot a white man in South Carolina for disrespecting his woman. He had to flee that night, but if he didn't do that, I wouldn't be here today. But he defended his black woman. He defended his black family, and he did what he had to do. He never went to jail before he died. He was almost 80 years old when he died. But he fought back, okay? So we have people that fought back. But we're afraid to fight back ourselves, which is a damn shame.
You know what? I think this is where I think about a revolution. I think, this is me. I think, first of all, you fight them with pen and paper. And at the poll, I think you take out crooked politicians. I think you take out politicians that ain't working for you. Politicians are scared. I think you take out all of them and you vote in some people who are willing to stand up for the people. And I think that's the start. And then I think from there you demand justice. Like I said, at your city council meeting, if you got police officers on the force that are not doing what they should be doing, you should be going to internal affairs. You should follow the process until it doesn't work anymore. You should go to your internal affairs division and say this officer is not what he's supposed to be doing, because I think you got to put some paper behind any officer that's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. I think it needs to be a paper trail that he's got civil rights lawsuits against him. I think we got to start moving forward in a direction that says, you know what, if you get out of line, I mean, and I am within my right, I am going to take the next step. I think we got to stop being that scared. I mean, you know what, if they going to get you anyway, what's the point?
Right.
I mean, seriously, exactly. What's the point? I mean, I don't know, maybe many don't look at it like that, but you know what? They can't kill me but one time.
Right.
I mean, they just can't. They can't kill me but one time. And I'm not advocating violence at all. I'm saying, you know what? Make sure that everything you do, you've done everything you can do before you feel that you have to take those type of actions. Would you agree with me on that, Rod?
It's not violence when it's self-defense, it's called self-preservation. You don't stop the fight, but you finish the fight. It's not violence, it's self-defense. It is not violence, it's self-defense. It's self-preservation. If I didn't stop the fight, you best believe I'm going to finish it. I'm not going to be the one on the ground bleeding out if I can help you. You know, I'm not advocating for violence. I'm just saying that I just can't look at how can a man or anybody allow somebody to violate their family without any type of retribution.
But you know what, Ryan?
How can you allow that as a human being?
You're from Memphis and I grew up there. But wait a minute, you're from Memphis and I grew up there. You remember Shannon Street, or you're a history buff, I'm sure you heard of it.
It was bullshit. Mm-hmm.
You remember, was that Shannon Street where they took the officer and was it Shannon Street?
Yeah, it was like Shannon Street, something like that, but it was the media, they twisted that. It wasn't what actually happened. If you talk to some old heads, they'll tell you a different style of the story. Because they always making the black man the boogeyman of society. We the most feared person. We the most weak person in society. Black men are the most least respected human beings on the planet.
Yeah.
We the least respected type of man. We the most feared, but we the least respected.
Isn't it something, though? You know, that's so powerful what you're just saying. You know, and you know it, but it's, something makes me think, they do know we're so powerful. So I have to, like, enslave, right? They have to take you out in the beginning, rape your wife, rape your child, tar you in front of the village, right, to stop you, because they know I believe they know that if we ever say enough is enough, in the 21st century, we're talking now, if we ever boycott your schools, if we ever say, believe me, I believe they do know. And so that's why they hold on to the wealth, they string us along, they be gatekeepers, because they know if we ever decide to unite one time, you only need one good time, or you only need a lot of something. You need one good something. And that's what they there to
pay them. Well, the biggest fear is the youth, because for the last 50 years there's been so many prisons built, but the prisons were built on the strength of how many third graders they already predicted was going to be incarcerated.
Right.
Just by the grades and the aptitude test and the task test and whatever test they decided to give, they could make a pretty good estimate. So now corporations run the prisons, so they know if we ever get our youth, our black boys, to focus on education, And not just sports, and not just what they're propagating, what they're putting out there for them to say, oh, if you do this, you could have this.
But if they look at sports and education, we have so many educated black men out there. The biggest fear of America is the educated black men.
Right. But you know, Ron said something earlier that I just thought about. He said, if they ever get in your head. And see, it seems like to me we're going back to a time of slavery where the black man is just instilled with fear. Because in slavery, how is it that one white man could have 100 black slaves? It was a fear factor.
There you go.
You feel me? And so today the black man can't go to a rally because he's scared he might get his license plate and he got tickets or, you know, he got, you know, a case in it or, you know, anything to keep from getting out there and standing up for what's right. And so it's a fear factor.
Right.
And so I think where we are today is all of these Eric Garners and Oscar Grants and Rodney Kings and, you know, Terrell Thomases, I think all of those people are examples. If you get out of line, this is what will happen to you too. And I think it's working.
Right.
I think it's working. I really do. I think black folks are so scared. And, you know, I am so sick and tired of being sick and tired of folks standing at the barbershop and on the corner and on the front porch talking about what they're going to do. I mean, listen, deliver me from them people. I'm sorry. Don't tell me what you're going to do. But when the rallies show up, you don't come. Or when there's a talk show like this, when you're scared to call in, because when you get through at the end of the day, one day, they will come knocking at your door. And I think karma would only serve you right if nobody shows up for you like you're not showing up for anybody else. I'm just saying, y'all. I'm so sick and tired of barbershop, of Monday morning quarterbacking kind of people who don't do nothing but talk.
Right.
And
lawmakers, just what you're saying.
When someone starts to do something, they target them for extermination. I mean, you look at the Black Panthers, you look at the American Indian Movement, and you look at the MOVE people.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
They
dropped a bomb. They dropped a bomb on the MOVE house and killed all them people. So
black
let's not forget
too.
Them. Yeah.
Black mayor.
A black mayor. It wasn't a black mayor, you know. You understand. See, color loses its thing to a certain extent that you know, people sell out. It's not black and white.
No, you're right. They'll sell us out. The very community that depends on them to lead, and then as soon as my girlfriend called them the pink people. I don't know why she called them pink people. I don't know why. I don't know where she's in the school. As soon as the pink people, that's what she say, sell them out, they come right back. The very ones they sold out, there's the one they will call and say, I need your help. I was just discriminated against. You know, but you didn't think about that. You know, that's what they're good for doing.
But see, I think a person who sells out a situation like that is just an idiot. I mean, just an idiot. Because when you get through at the end of the day, you got family. You got friends that you care about, and it's happening too often. What was the friend of the president who was sticking his key in his door, was trying to stick his key in the door, and the police came up and basically arrested him for trying to stick his own key in his own door?
Skip Gates, the professor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was just sticking his key in the door. And they thought he was in a neighborhood he didn't belong in, so automatically you're guilty even of standing on your own porch, sticking your own key in your own door. I mean, and the reason that probably didn't get worse, you know, I'm not even sure. I don't know, maybe he dropped the president's name. I don't know. But I was wondering how he didn't end up dead. I mean, because it's just getting so stupid so often where the officer, in my opinion, in a lot of these situations, comes to the scene and doesn't want to hear anything you have to say. It's automatically, you listen to me, I'm in control, and if you don't, I'll take you to jail. That's not problem solving. I mean, you mean we don't have any officers trained to defuse situations? You mean all the officers we got on the street, all they knew how to do was escalate situations? That's crazy. That's just crazy. I mean, so
they all watch too many Clint Eastwood movies with Dirty Harry. Dirty Harry? Yeah. That's how they brainwash people. You know, I come from that community. I know how those people are. They will hate people, and they have no, in the community I was raised in, they would say racist jokes and full of hatred, and they would have zero contact with the people they are speaking evil about. Zero contact. But that's their perception. And they watch Dirty Harry movie or what they're told, you know, from the previous generation.
And you're right. You're right. It's a brainwashing and a conditioning. So, because I'm a parent educator, and I'm writing a book called Game On Parents, Moving from the Sidelines into the Game of Education Reform. And there's a chapter I talk about the conditioning, because we don't question anything. Anything somebody tells us to do, we do. They say, you let in the mail, send your baby. We don't know the color of the paint on the walls. We don't know who the teachers are. We don't know if the book was made. We just do. We're conditioned to trust the society. And then when those rules are wrong, you know the rules are wrong. You know what they're doing to the kids is wrong. And yet we still tell our babies, we're sorry, baby. The law say we got to send you to school. And the baby looking at you like, really, Mom? But they go because they're trusting the parents to do what's right. So if you look at this whole scenario, we're brainwashed to not fight. Don't be violent. They'll shoot you. They'll kill you, right? There's this fear. I got my house. I got my mule, right? I don't want to lose the mule. I don't want to lose my mortgage. I got a decent job. I make minimum wage, a little bit more minimum wage. So we're okay. And everything's not okay. And we don't want to lose what we think we're going to lose what we have, you know, if we fight for that dignity like your grandfather, you know. So it's just a shame.
You know, it is a shame for two reasons. Because, you know, and I have to pause when I say this. You know, today, I think it was today, Al Sharpton met with the family of Eric Garner, and they met with federal prosecutors today in Brooklyn, and they were meeting about civil rights being violated. Well, that said, you know, how often have we done that and nothing happened? You know what I'm saying? Nothing. So it's like, I don't know. I'm just frustrated tonight. So let me go to the phone lines. Let me just refrain from saying what I'm thinking. Eric, 770-807. Good evening. You're on Center Stage. That didn't open. 770-807. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Good evening. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I've been listening not that long, but with great interest in what I'm hearing. I'm hearing, and I just like to say that I just heard a moment ago that, you know, people are brainwashed to accept certain things and accept the fact that everything's going to be okay, and they've been told you know, they don't want to endanger their job. Well, if that's true, and I'll admit that may be true for many people, but if they are, they're not doing their duty as citizens, because police are agents of the government, and you are never, never, I don't care what level of government is, from the creature in the White House on down, you're supposed to challenge the government when you think it's not behaving appropriately. Every agent of the government is subject to scrutiny and oversight by every single citizen because of the power they wield and the power they are granted. Now, that's part and parcel, believe it or not, of what we inherited and should have from the framers and founders of this nation who wrote the Constitution. When they wrote it, they set out to limit the authority of government at every level. Why? Because they were Christians, essentially, most of them, or at least deists, and they knew that they were fallen and corruptible because they were human, one, and they were human beings are all, no matter who they are, subject to corruption. And the best way to minimize the effects of corruption is to diffuse power and spread it around, not to concentrate it and consolidate it and make it possible for citizens to question the agents of government. So if you're up there thinking that, you know, things are okay, you're not doing your duty as a citizen, even according to the model laid down by the founding fathers in the Constitution. So, yes, well, you have to challenge these police officers and anybody else. Now, having said that, as a former police officer, someone who has been in these sort of situations innumerable times. I mean, I have had, and I was 20, I'm a retired Illinois State policeman, and I've got 28 years on the job, and I really, I'm telling you right now, I'm not trying to make anything up. I literally had perhaps hundreds of hand-to-hand encounters with resisting suspects. I mean, I don't know how many I had. There were probably maybe a hundred or more. People who resisted at varying levels of resistance, all the way from people who tried to take my gun and kill me with it, and that happened more than once. That happened several times. To people who just kind of pulled away from me, and I had to use either a lock hold on them or I had to, like, stun them to get them to comply. So, I mean, I've seen the gamut all the way, including people who shot at me. So I know how it is. And I saw this videotape several times, and I'm not willing to make a judgment on it either way. Either way, until I know more facts.
Let me stop you right there. And I know being an ex-cop, it's got to be hard to say one of your fellow officers was wrong, because we know how the brotherhood goes. But I'm sorry, I don't know how anybody can look at that tape and say they don't have a judgment either way.
I'm going to tell you how. I'll be happy to tell you how if you'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
The reason is because the cause of death in a situation like that. I mean, the formal cause of death. And remember, there hasn't been a formal cause of death released yet.
Well,
it has not been released yet. But wait a minute, ma'am. It's not an unreasonable.
How about he was standing, walking, talking, and breathing before he was taken to the ground?
I'm trying to explain it to you if you listen, because I've seen this. I don't know how many times I've been to autopsies. I know. The reason is because even though it is reasonable to conclude his death was a result of a chokehold, taint necessarily so. It may or may not have been the result of the chokehold.
Well,
see, people are saying it was a result of the chokehold, and they don't know. It is possible it may have been another cause. Or it's even possible that the chokehold was a precipitate cause. But none of us know until the report is in. None of us know. We're speculating.
How can one look at that video and say,
I just explained it to you, ma'am. You don't want to accept it.
How can someone look at that video and say the fight caused the
ma'am, I just explained it to you. I understand you don't want to accept it. That's understandable. You don't have to.
Wait, hold up. You can keep your voice down. I just have a question for you. Is that like having a bullet in the chest and calling it lead poisoning?
Sometimes it is. By the way, in fact, what you say is exactly what I'm saying. Yes, it is possible. Yes, a secondary cause of death is, in fact, poisoning from a secondary infection, not the direct wound caused by the bullet. You see, that's what I'm saying.
You're saying exactly what I'm trying to say.
Your whole foundation for this, right?
Your whole foundation is saying the Constitution challenges us to object to people or to the law. You know the Constitution?
No, to question the government.
Hold on, please. First of all, the Constitution made African Americans 3/5 of people. Second of all, the Native Americans were cowards. They were labeled as merciless Indian savages. Women did not have the right to
vote.
That's
the Declaration. Okay? The Constitution didn't do that. It said that in the Declaration.
Oh, okay. The way the laws were set up, they only wanted the males, white males, with property to vote. Okay?
No, it didn't say that either.
They granted equality for everybody. It never was like that. You're living in a fantasy land.
The Constitution didn't say that. You see, you're making things up. It didn't say that. State constitutions did, but the United States Constitution didn't say that.
Okay.
See, everything you just said was essentially incorrect.
Okay.
I'm sorry. You're wrong. You're just wrong.
Let's come on and take the next caller. 484, I'm coming to you next. If you were standing by a window and you and I got involved in a verbal altercation and I spocked you in the eye and you lost your balance and fell out of the window, fell 12 stories and broke your neck and died, did I kill you or did the fall kill you?
Actually, the fall killed me, but you would be responsible for my death.
then I rest my case.
No, that's not rest the case, man. See, the officers have a duty to make arrests for offenses. There's a difference. You don't have authority to sock me and knock me out the window unless you're acting in self-defense. Police officers have a right and a duty to make arrests and use appropriate levels of force to effect an arrest. So it's not equivalent. It's not the same thing. So now, if a death results as a result of police officers using force, then the question should be, was the force appropriate and necessary and/or lawful? Now, I saw what looked like a chokehold by one of the officers. I grant you, it looked like a chokehold. New York City Police Department regulation, not law, but regulation forbids the use of chokeholds. Those officers may be subject to disciplinary action for doing something that's against New York Police Department regulations, to include firing and/or suspension. However, there isn't a New York state law that forbids every state police agency in the state of New York from using a chokehold. There just isn't. There may be as a result of this, but as of now, there isn't. So police officers are free to use effective means of restraint to effect an arrest.
Okay, I'm going to pause you for just a second. Listen, we're down to our last 9 minutes in the show. At 10 o'clock straight up, we will go off the air. So that means unless you're on the phone lines and there are 50 phone lines available, you need to get on the phone lines now because it's straight up 10 o'clock. We will not be, we'll be streaming, but you'll only be able to listen via the internet, via the telephone system. So 347-850-8390 is the number to call. 347 is at the top of your screen. 347-850-8390. Sir, I'm gonna pause that and I'm gonna take the next caller. 484-632. Good evening, you're on Center Stage.
Hi, how are you?
I was
listening. I kinda understand what the guy is saying, not that I totally agree. We have to understand that, the police have certain criteria where they can do whatever they want to subdue you. Not that I agree with it. Do I think that unnecessary force is used? I agree with that. But I think that, this is not the first person that lost their life in the hands of the police. The police has always been brutalizing and killing our black men, our black youth, and our black women. This is nothing new. So I think one of the ways to try to combat this is that we have to teach our people how to deal with the system to get out of their presence and to get out of the situation. I don't agree with what they did. I think it is brutality. But the fact of the matter is they've been brutalizing us for so long, this is nothing new. So in order for us to try to combat it, I think we should spend more time teaching, especially our young brothers and our young sisters, how to deal with the police. Not that I agree with it 100%, but we have to teach our kids how to, be a little respectful and be compliant in order to try to prevent the brutality. I don't justify what they did, but the fact of the matter is they've been beating us and brutalizing us for an extended period of time. And until we come together as a people and start going upside their heads, it's going to continue to happen. So all we're going to do is talk about the effects. So what we should do is start teaching our kids how to stay out of the police way and know how to talk and get out of that situation. Because if
But this particular individual wasn't in the police way. There was another altercation going on.
I'm not saying that he was. I'm not saying that he was. And like I said, I do think what they did was wrong. But the fact of the matter, they're always doing this to us as a people.
Right.
And we have to find a way to stop it. And right now, to me, it's sad that he lost. But I see kids in Philly being beaten by police officers because they're getting smart and sarcastic. And they're not being taught how to stay out of the devil's way. Sometimes, I tell my son, if you're walking home and you got to come to a group of boys, you might have to say, where the weed at? You can get by. Not that I can do it.
Excuse me one second. They have four sons. So basically you're saying if the police come, just lay down and put your hands behind your back.
No, right. That's what I'm saying.
I'm saying what you're saying, I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying it's not really applicable to this particular situation. for the simple reason he was not a part of the altercation that was going on. He was a target after the police got there. So that means that any innocent black man should lay down and give up any time the police come to keep from getting killed. So at some point in time, we cannot be at fault for being black.
But listen, hey, don't get me wrong. I do believe in defending
I'm going to pause up for just a second. Listen, hold on 1 second. We're down to 5 minutes left in the show. Listen, we're going to go into a little overtime on this show. If you want to be a part of the conversation, if you've got a comment, or if you would like to continue to listen to the rest of the conversation, you need to get on the phone line now because you won't be able to listen via Internet after 10 o'clock straight up. The number to call in at is 347-850-8390. Hold on, please. 347-850-8390.
As a police officer, and as a former police officer, one thing that used to irritate me to no end was all of the laws these politicians would be passing, some of them were just utterly idiotic, that I would have to go out and enforce. And a couple of times when I just got to tell you, the times people would resist when I had to make an arrest, often on the basis of a complaint from somebody else. So, I mean, it's not like I could just ignore it. And I go up to make contact with the subject. Next thing you know, I'm rolling around on the ground with this guy because he didn't want to go to jail. Now I'm thinking to myself, here I am enforcing this stupid law. Now it's escalated from a simple, not even a misdemeanor arrest. It was going to be like a city ordinance violation. But now it's escalated to where he's resisting arrest, obstructing justice, and battering on a police officer. And now he's going for my gun, which at this point, when somebody goes for your gun, that gives you, under the rules known as the use of force continuum that police officers are trained in, that now means you have the right to use deadly force against him, necessary to kill him, to prevent him from harming you. Now, I'm just thinking to myself, if these idiot politicians hadn't passed these stupid laws in the first place for me to have to enforce, I wouldn't be involved with this fool. Now, I say to you, what we need is more politicians who are not willing to pass so many bloody stupid laws. They shouldn't have this law in New York that this task force was going around and force against Mr. Garner. Maybe he's still be alive.
I think we need people to stand up for our hood and protect the women and the people in our hood. Politicians.
Let me ask you a question. If you were one of those officers that came upon Mr. Garner on Thursday, that fatal Thursday, what was he doing wrong that caused the altercation?
Okay, this is my understanding based upon every. Because see, I used to be an instructor. I was a police firearm instructor, and that's what I'm saying. I studied this case because that's what I do. Whenever I hear these things happening, I would study these cases to go use them in the classes I taught, so my officers wouldn't be caught up in this.
Right.
Okay, I use them as instructive example, and I studied this one. I studied this one the same way with the same eye.
If you got to get on the phone lines now. Well, go ahead.
Here's what I'm saying. If I witness, it's what's called an on-view arrest. The officer makes a view. My understanding, this was an on-view arrest. They witnessed the man selling unstamped individual cigarettes.
No. Time out. No one witnessed. No, they did not. How did you witness him selling it and you didn't see him with it? I mean, come on.
Ma'am, that's what I was told. If I'm incorrect, so be it. Okay. My understanding is the officer witnessed a hand-to-hand sale of individual cigarettes. Now, if they didn't, they didn't. That's why you have adjudication and triers of fact, and that's why it's determined whether or not the officer's telling the truth, whether he's telling the truth, whether he was harassed. That's why most states have a law. That when a police officer tells you you're under arrest, when he tells you to turn around, put your hands behind your back, whether he's even if he's making an unlawful arrest, you're supposed to comply and let the adjudicatory process determine whether you're guilty or innocent. Because I got news for you. Police officers do break the law. Police officers do unlawful things. But see, what they're trying to avoid when they pass those laws that say you can't even resist an unlawful arrest is the very sort of thing that killed Mr. Garner.
Mr. Garner is not even here to defend himself. And he'll
That's why if he'd have complied, maybe he would be.
Oh, wow.
See,
Ma'am, if the police officer's telling me he's under arrest, he says, look, I ain't done nothing. You ain't got no reason to arrest me. They say, okay, you're under arrest. You ain't got no – they're supposed to say, okay, well, you're right. Well, I think we'll just leave. Is that
would
what
you be yelling at every answer?
Is that what they're supposed to do? I just want to know.
No, I'm saying, will you be yelling at every answer?
No, I'm not. I'm asking a legitimate question.
Can I say something?
What do you think I'm supposed to do?
Okay. Can I say something? And this goes back to what I was trying to say. I don't condone what they did. What they did was really horrible. But at the end of the day, what are we going to do about it? Because it's going on for so long. So at this point, we have to learn how to get out of that situation. And we have to learn how to get out of that situation so our people will not lose their lives. I'm not saying
Let's go here. It's not like people have not been in custody and died in custody. So it's like you're 100% guaranteed that you're going to live even if you let them put the handcuffs on you. So,
but I understand what the young lady is saying, right? Because I'm a mother. And you better believe I'm counting my nickels this very next paycheck so I can at least buy this boy a decent phone. He won't have no track phone over here, right? I can't even afford. And you're right. I have to agree with her. I'm going to have to teach him how to. Well, I can fight another day. I need him to live to fight another day.
Well, ma'am, I'm going to surprise y'all here. I'm going to tell you something. See, I believe, look. People have unalienable rights. One of the unalienable rights, every human being, I don't care if they're a criminal, I don't care if they're law-abiding citizen, doesn't matter who they are. If you're a human being, you have an inalienable right of self-defense. If you really believe in your heart of hearts with reasonable certainty, I said, notice what I said, with reasonable certainty, that a police officer is going to murder you. You have an absolute right to defend your life against him, to include killing him if necessary. Now,
well,
I made that clear. But you got to understand that when it comes down, you're going to have to be able to show why you reasonably believe that officer was going to murder you, because police officers are not allowed to murder you with impunity. So,
well,
I mean, I'm making that clear. I'm making it clear. However, it is clear to me from looking at that tape that those police officers, I don't think, intended to murder Mr. Garner. They were trying to put him under arrest. That's not intending to murder him.
That was just on his back.
But it comes back to the system giving them privileges to abuse their rights. I live in Philadelphia. I see police brutality all day, every day. And it's not warranted at all.
But is even police brutality the intent to murder? Is even police brutality the intent to murder?
Let me tell you, my older brother was murdered right in front of me, and I testified. They was going to a house next door to me. My brother was leaving out the back door. You know, my father had a construction company. He's leaving out. They asked him to put his hands up. They was going to the house next door. He put his hands up, and they shot and they killed my brother, and I witnessed it. And I testified, and they twisted everything up so much. I understand what y'all saying. It's a crazy situation, but in order to try to alleviate, unless we shooting back at these pigs and killing them and defending our family, our women, our children, and our youth, then we have to find a way to minimize it. And a lot of it has to do with trying to get out of certain situations.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly now because, like I said, I don't know too many police officers when they tell someone you are under arrest. Now, once those words have been uttered, you are under arrest. At that point, there is no longer room for negotiation.
Okay, there is no more room for negotiation.
Somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to lose.
Okay, brother, what about undercover cops that's dressed in regular street clothes just jumping out on brothers that's walking down the street?
If you're jumping out
on a person and you don't identify yourself as a police officer, you're in record clothes, a person
then you don't have the protection that the law affords a law enforcement officer. If you don't make clear that you are a law enforcement officer to a suspect, you do not have the protection the law affords the police officer. So the answer to your question,
my
question is those police officers don't have the protection of law. They don't have the protection of law. Those police officers do that and do not identify themselves at some point.
You sound
do not have the protection of law.
The same system has brutalized black men and women for decades.
Let me ask the ex-officer a question, because maybe this will drive it home for all of us as we got to close out in a minute. What would you have done differently than those officers that arrived on the scene that day?
Okay, well, one reason I'm having trouble, I would have a little bit of trouble answering, because the tapes I saw have clearly been edited. They've cut out some portions of it. No, they've clearly been edited. I mean, I saw the cut and the edit. So, and I'm going to answer your question now. Based upon what I saw, again, let me say again, what I saw, based 28 years' experience with dozens, if not hundreds, of these kind of encounters, where I had to use physical force. By the way, I never killed anybody. Never. Not once.
Okay.
But on all these instances where I had to use physical force against an offender, I had to go hand-to-hand with an offender, I probably wouldn't have done much different, except I wouldn't have used a forbidden
Did you work in a black neighborhood or white neighborhood? Because
I work mostly in black neighborhoods.
It's a whole other different...
Oh, that's right. Well, that's why they're not dead, because it was a white neighborhood. Well, we understand
exactly.
That.
Well, ma'am, now, see, now, I know police officers kill white suspects. In fact, there was one very famous case in Illinois where they changed the law when white police officers killed a white burglary suspect who had his hands handcuffed behind his body.
Look,
white police officers killed a white burglary suspect.
You as a cop. Do you not think that black people are targeted and treated most unfairly and experience the most brutality? You as a cop.
No, and I'll tell you why.
Wow.
But I'll tell you why.
You
probably don't want to hear it, but I'll tell you why.
Because you worked in the white neighborhood, sir.
If you wish to listen, I will tell you.
Okay.
Let me tell you why. First of all, there is simply no comparison. I mean, zero, between, at least in the city I work, Chicago, because I know, there is no comparison between the number of identified, notice what I said, identified suspects, either by the victims or by roll call report. You know, police officers, before they go on the street, they get a roll call, and they get told who they're supposed to be looking for.
They're told
what the crimes are, and they got physical descriptions of the suspects, often with identikit drawings of the offender. I hate to tell you this, but it just so happens that 95% of the time it's a black offender. I enforce criminal action. I'm not looking for welfare offenders. I wasn't looking for welfare offenders. I was looking for criminal offenders identified as such by victims.
Well, when that man strangled that man,
they had complaints from business owners in the area who resented that they were being undercut because they got to pay these stupid taxes in New York from these stupid politicians who overtax them. And here's a guy they think is not paying his taxes, and he's getting to undercut their business by selling single cigarettes. That's why they were there. Because of the complaints from the businessmen who got to pay these stupid, onerous taxes that these silly politicians in New York put on them.
Let's do this. He never addressed my question, and we got to get out of here. What would you have done different if you had encountered
Based on what I saw, other than not using a forbidden restraint technique, I would have done pretty much the same thing. I'll say it again. Same thing.
He probably would. Wow.
Let me finish my question, y'all. So you walk up on him, first of all, And he doesn't even have anything. You don't ask him, can I see your pockets? You don't ask him anything. You just immediately put him under arrest.
Ma'am, see, now what you just did, what you just did, what you just said, what you just said violates the Constitution. You just made a violation of the Constitution, and then you're up here railing at the cops for not doing it? That would have been a constitutional violation if they'd done it the way you said.
No,
they don't do it fair all the way around. They brutalize black people.
Okay, I'm going to say it again. Look, when you approach an offender, look, this is the only legal reasons you have to make an arrest. Let me tell you what they are. Number one, you make an arrest based on probable cause. Number two, you make an arrest based on a warrant. Or number three, you make an on-view arrest based on something you witnessed.
My law.
Now, that's the only way you make an arrest.
People on the road are officers and judges because officers can interpret the law on the spot. You can trip up a charge in a minute, and the courts have to uncipher that.
An officer can do anything illegal. Officers often do things illegal. If you're going to tell me a corrupt cop can violate the Constitution and law, I'm telling you, you're right. And they do. But I'm telling you what they're legally allowed to do, and I know that some of them violate the law. That's not my argument. I didn't see any violation of the law here. Not in this case. Not in this case. Maybe in other cases you might want to talk about, but not in this one.
Okay, let's start again. You are called to the scene because there is a fight, and Mr. Garner just broke up the fight. Why are you not pursuing the two people that were involved in the fight? Why are you going to Mr. Garner?
Okay, now you're asking me to determine things that I simply cannot, because I cannot ask the officers why they did. Now, just because I'm answering the question, please.
Just because an officer is called to the scene
for one situation does not mean he has to exclude every other information that comes to him by whatever means once he gets there. It just doesn't. That's not the way it works. Not the way the law works or anything else. So, in other words, if he was to come to the scene, call to break up a fight, the fight is over, he doesn't know who the participant was, but he sees an armed robbery in progress on the scene, he can deal with the armed robbery. He doesn't say, well, I got to go after the people who are fighting.
Since you've interrupted everybody else, to make sure you finish your statement, I'm just questioning. You said that it didn't matter. He can make he can judge the situation once he gets there. Just because that's what he wants to do. So just like I was saying,
I didn't say that.
I always let you finish. You cannot do that this time. I always let you finish.
Well, I didn't say
so
that.
So you're basically saying that regardless of what it is, so this man was being arrested because he was black. So whatever charges they said,
I don't know if that's the case. You said it, not me. If you know that he was arrested because he was black, then that's for you to know. You know it clearly. You said he was. You made a definitive statement of fact. He was arrested because he's black. Okay, then you know better than me then, because I don't know that.
Well, sir, thank you for your service, and I'm sure those people in that community you work in are going to be very safe and they sleeping that night. But I can assure you, we're not sleeping that night. And especially when you said you don't see anything wrong with what happened with Garner, and you would do the same. So, and I'm strangling that white man over there in that corner. So please don't really insult our intelligence, but I appreciate you. Please believe that.
If you want a police officer on the scene, and I'm not bragging, you'd want to have one with the kind of integrity, character that I had. I tried to play it by the book.
He showed up on that sidewalk. I bet you Eric and everybody else who saw those officers thought they were safe.
I never killed anybody, ma'am. I didn't kill. I made hundreds of arrests. I never killed anybody.
Thank you for your help. But you know what you did? You helped us to understand the mindset of what we're dealing with. So we do appreciate you calling in tonight for that reason, because it tells me that no matter what the situation is, let me finish. No matter what the situation is, when the officer arrives on the scene, I'm black and he's in authority, so whatever he says, I need to drop to the ground and comply, regardless of whether or not my rights
are. No, not whatever he says. If he says you're under arrest, you do. Yes, you do. Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that. For no reason at all, he can just walk up on me and say, I'm under arrest.
Yeah, he can tell you're under arrest, yes. That's true. And sometimes he may be violating the law when he does just that. I'm not saying they're not. I'm simply saying when he tells you you're under arrest, under almost every state jurisdiction in the United States, you're obligated to comply with that command. You're obligated to, legally, even if he's breaking the law. I'm just telling you, you may not like it, but look, if you don't like it, tell your legislators repeal that law in your state.
Now you don't like it, move to Indiana.
Documentation beats conversation. When the officer arrives on the scene, if his behavior is unbecoming an officer, if it borders on malfeasance at all, I suggest you stop right then and say to the officer, I need you to call your supervisor to the scene. Okay? Comply.
That's always good to say. If the officer chooses to do it, he's not required to, though.
You know who
I'm required.
But you know what? He's not required. But when you make that request and he doesn't comply, when shit gets out of control, then he is held responsible. You make certain you ask that
he
may be his supervisor to the scene. Okay?
He may be. But I said, what if another supervisor comes to the scene and he agrees with the cop? Then what? You guys ask for another supervisor all the way up to the mayor?
No,
I mean, what are you going to do?
He's saying what it is. So, right, even though we're trying to do a documentation, this man telling you, let me tell you real life.
Ma'am, look, the police officer's not there to let you make your documentary or whatever it is you want to do. He's there to effect the arrest and make enforce the law. Now, look, it's up to you to get your attorney and make your case as to why he violated law. And if he did, and by the way, if the cop violated law, I hope you win. I don't like
you
cops get away with that. I hope you win. But look, I'm just telling you at the point. I'm just telling you at the point it happens, you're kind of out of options when he says you're under arrest other than to resist, in which case he will use whatever force is necessary to effect his arrest.
Look,
I'm just telling you, that's what's going to happen.
As soon as you show up. We out of options.
Well, maybe. Look, we don't live in a perfect world. Cops damn sure don't. You know, look, I had 5 excessive use of force beefs on me in my career. 5. And not one of them was sustained. And every single one was against a convicted felon multiple times. Had already been either arrested or convicted for resisting arrest and battering on police officers. Every single one. Now, of course, they all said I used excessive force in order to affect my arrest when they were beating on me, knocking me down. Included with the arrest would be the reports of the injuries they inflicted on me, along with the injuries that he got. And every one of them said it wasn't justified. They all do. Now, I'm not saying that every single time it's not, because, look, there are brutal cops out there. I keep saying there are cops who violate the law. But, look, all I'm saying is make your case in adjudication. That's where you're supposed to do it.
Well, I appreciate you being on the call, because it takes heart to get on the call in the midst of all this and defend the murder, right?
I'm trying to stand up for the rule of law. I don't believe in execution first, trial later for anybody, citizens or cops. I don't play Alice in Wonderland, and I don't chase the white rabbit down the rabbit hole. I don't believe in the Red Queen. I don't believe in the Red Queen.
Woo!
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
I wish you luck. I don't like brutal cops either. I don't like corrupt cops either. I'm telling you right now. I had
a problem with
them. I reported a bunch of them one time. I never heard the end of it. I mean, I caught all kind of hell for doing it, but it was the right thing to do. The right thing. Look, you got to do the right thing. Sometimes, you know, doing the right thing is painful. Either way, you do the right thing.
The community you said you worked in, they get to live to make a complaint. In our community, we don't even get to live to make the complaint. So it's just different.
I worked in Chicago and Cook County. Are you kidding me? Chicago cops can be very brutal. I ain't lying. Yes, they can.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Look, I'm not trying to tell you. Again, it does happen. But look, you got to remember, police officers make hundreds of thousands of arrests around the United States every day. Not many people die getting arrested. It just is a rarity. Given hundreds of thousands of arrests every day. Every day.
Okay, well, we got to get out of here. Run a final comment.
Good luck to you, ma'am.
Okay.
And that's the comment he's telling us. If you black, good luck to you. He said it, right?
You know what? That was very telling. And again, I'm going to reiterate, if you find yourself in police custody, if the situation is not occurring as it should, first of all, make sure you get badge and information about your officer. Secondly, and all officers who come to the scene, ask that a supervisor be brought to the scene, and I will tell you then, comply, comply, comply. You know, hopefully you won't die if you comply, comply, comply. And then if things did not go well, once you're under arrest and get out on bond, make sure that you file a formal complaint with the Internal Affairs Division. Make sure you contact your city council, your mayor. You know, let them know that things are not going right with the police department. Keep making those complaints. Make sure that you paper trail, paper trail, paper trail on these situations, because only through documentation can we prove some of these situations, because obviously listening to what the officer or ex-officer just said, we don't stand a damn chance on the street. So, okay, guys, we're out of here tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hopefully we shed some light on the Eric Gardner situation, as tragic as it was, and hopefully it helped someone to know what to do, or partially what to do, if they find themselves in the same situation. Another young lady submitted a song to me about the Eric Gardner situation, and we're going to go out with this song tonight. Okay, guys, we'll see you next week. Same channel, same bad time. CenterStageRadio@yahoo.com. Drop me a line if you have a show idea that you'd like us to do. Okay, good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
We're trying to get her music on, but it's not playing. I apologize. We're not going to be able to get her song on, and I promised her we'd play it, but it's not coming up, y'all. Aw, hate that. For whatever reason, we're not able to get her audio on. Oh, here we go.
Before you fucking cut, I hope you get no peace. Not even in the sleep.